Welcome to the Metaphysical Martini Show, where wit and wisdom come together to bridge the gap between the spirit realm and the physical world.
With Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Hello everyone, I'm Ani Avedisian. Welcome to Metaphysical Martini. Three parts spirit, one part rational mind. Add two drops of optimism. Give it all a good hard shake and pour. Dress it with the olives of grace and empathy. Sit back, sip slowly, and contemplate the wonder of cosmic co-creation. And a hearty hello to you all. Hello, hello, hello. Thanks for joining this crazy old woman for yet another round of cocktails on this week's Metaphysical Martini, the show that tries to sort out what's true, what's woo, and what gets flushed down the loo. In a world so bloody insane, we simply have to ask, how much do they pay the morons to protest against the people who are trying to save us from the tyranny of a one-world government enslavement? Because brains, darlings, they're supposed to be in our heads, not in our basements. Now, Bongino says, heads are gonna roll, so be patient. And we will be patient because we do trust the plan, but we will never be complacent. Boys and girls of the Trump administration, we need to see some gallows action. We need proof that you are committed to destroying the Luciferian faction. We know you are. We want the people who don't know as much as we do to see something. Now, if someone vandalizes our property or our place, are we not entitled to carve the same markings on their face? Perhaps that would make them think twice before they voluntarily fall from grace, because I believe the mental health collapse has only just begun. And it will take a while before we go from spin doctor back to America homespun. And the issue that to me is the most appealing, all the gun laws need immediate repealing. Someone just took over the ATF, which I think should be abolished, but then that puts it into the realm of the DOJ, who I don't know. I'll just say, huzzah for the second. Folks, it is entirely possible in the current climate that we will lose some of the blue states. And honestly, they are welcome to secede from the Union and try to make it on their own as independent entities of wokeness. Will that happen? I don't know. I don't know anything really anymore, but I do know this. I know it will take a long while to remove the corrupted from their swamp of entitlement at state level. After all, remember the Koch brothers bought all the local politicians before they moved up into the federal area. All the little bureaucrats with their little slush funds, pretending they're doing the world a service, when in fact, most of them are thieves and should be put in cages and suspended from the ceiling while we throw rotten fruit at them. I live in Oregon. No idea how that happened and how I ended up here, but for whatever reason, I'm here. And Oregon is a red state, but somehow we have a state government populated by blue-rinsed morons with IQ scores as low as my air conditioning settings. They don't want to bend the knee to the federal government's common sense approach to making America great again. So what are they going to do, these little slush fund Susies? Well, they will invent a million new taxes to make up the shortfall. And I suspect they will try to introduce a sales tax. Dun, 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 dun. We don't have sales tax in Oregon. But if the feds are going to cut them off, because they're encouraging children to cut off their dicks, then they're going to have to get the money somewhere, and they think they're going to get it from us? Ha ha, we shall see. What does that mean? What does that mean? It means people who want to live in America and not in Wokistan, people like me, will probably be leaving Oregon for a patriot state. Where should I move to, my darlings? Or should I stay and fight? Where should I move to? My first choice is actually Florida, because I love sunshine, not crocodiles so much, or alligators or whatever you've got down there. But I do love sunshine. But I am told that the humidity is not something sane people can live with. Am I to assume that all Floridians are now insane because they have wet heads? I think not. I mean, I know a few of them. They seem quite normal. Missouri. Now, I've always liked Missouri. It sounds so American, you know. It's a strong possibility. And my partner's hometown is Kansas City, Missouri, KCMO. I don't want to live in the city, perhaps, but it's a big state. And I do like their stance on all things American liberty. And, you know, everything's up to date in Kansas City. They've gone about as far as they can go. They went and built a skyscraper 7 stories high, about as high as a building ought to grow. Everything's like a dream in Kansas City. It's better than a magic lantern show. You can turn the radiator on whenever you want some heat. With every kind of comfort, every house is all complete. I'm sure I sang that wrong, but oh, I do love those musicals. I enjoyed my trips, the ones I've had to Kansas City, Missouri. I think maybe it's time to rent an apartment there for, say, 3 months and see if I jive with the vibe. Anyway, if you have any ideas of where you think I should move to and where Metaphysical Martini could thrive, do let me know. Moving on, because we should, really, moving on. Welcome back, Martini heads. Let me raise my glass to you. Where is my glass? Here it is. I am drinking to you. Oh, I think you will love today's cocktail. And more about that towards the end of the show. It is a fizzy one. And, you know, with my digestive system being what it is, there may be some burping throughout the show. Please forgive me. I apologize in advance. If you are joining us for the first time, a very warm welcome to you. Be advised, the show is politically incorrect so as not to erode the intellect. We are not woke. We do not tolerate insanity or depravity. We understand and respect the Constitution of the United States. We like things like common sense, common decency, common courtesy. We're common folk. We believe mankind to be a divine construct, a cosmic construct, if you prefer. But although we have many religious martini heads with whom we have excellent relations because they are excellent people, and in the interests of transparency, I should tell you, I personally believe religion to be a cultural hallucination. It's a human construct. Mankind is a divine construct. It may be difficult for some to work through indoctrination, and I wish you luck with that. But please know, it is possible. And not only possible, it is the only way to stop our minds from being hijacked and manipulated by the Luciferian global agenda of one world government. I mean, look where we are now. It's back to Christians versus the Moors. And so I suppose that all has to play out in some last bloody battle until we all realize we have shit for brains if we do stuff like that. So in a nutshell, your host's ideology, I am your host, is libertarian. She voted for Trump because she knows it's the only chance we have to avoid totalitarian enslavement. And so this show, I guess, is God without religion, patriotism without partisanship. I call it the Fellowship of the Reclaimed Mind. And we also throw in a really well-mixed cocktail. And boom, what more could you possibly ask for? Arnie, yes, Arnie, what do we have on today's show to excite and titillate we the people? I think today we'll start off with an all things American quiz, and then we'll follow that up with Quack, questions, answers, and comments. I have no idea if we'll have time for a silly poem, but I do know that we will always end up with the cocktail of the day. Now, about the cocktail. Quite a few have written in asking me to spend more time on that. You know, not on the actual drinking, But to explain the brands that I use and to share any mixology tips or, you know, mixology folklore, I will happily do this. And I will happily do this going forward because I'm a big believer these days of drinking less alcohol. So I pride myself in taking the time to mix my one drink properly and to sip it slowly, to enjoy the full experience, aroma, taste, and the warm afterglow. Sexy. So without further ado, my darlings, let's get on with our All Things American quiz. Here's how it's going to go. I will ask 15 questions, and I will follow up with one super obscure bonus question. There will be three levels of difficulty, with five questions in each section. The first five will be labeled easy peasy lemon squeezy. The second five, that I haven't drunk enough to be slurring my words yet. The second five will be a little bit more beefy, and the last five will be a little bit more brain freezy, and the bonus question will be something I dug up on a day when I wasn't thinking straight. So are you ready, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls? You have 5 seconds to answer each question, and you're on the honor system here, and you keep your own score, because I can't see you, or can I? No, I can't. And there will be prizes. I will send you a $25 gift certificate to any of my services just for playing and getting at least 5 correct. So just send me an email with your score, and I will send that along pronto. And if you score top marks, you will receive a $50 gift certificate to any of my services. All right. Are we ready? Am I ready? Yes. All right. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. In the easy peasy lemon squeezy section. Question number 1. Which president is featured on the $1 bill? Which president is featured on the $1 bill? And the answer, of course, is George Washington, a very famous man in America, born on his family's plantation in Pope's Creek in Westmoreland County, Virginia, February the 22nd, 1732, to Augustine and Mary Ball Washington. And Washington's father was a leading planter in the area and also served as a justice of the county court. Washington served 2 terms as president. His first term, 1789 to 1793, was occupied primarily with organizing the executive branch of the brand new government and establishing administrative procedures that would make it possible for the government to operate in the way with the amount of efficiency he thought would be essential to the future of the republic. And his second term was 1793 to 1797. That was dominated more by foreign affairs and marred really by a deepening partisanship in his own administration. Assumed that presidency on the eve of the French Revolution, so that would have been a time of great international crisis. George Washington passed away finally December the 14th, 1799, surrounded by people whom I guess he loved and thought that they loved him, and maybe they did. He was apparently quite a taciturn being, and he was not buried for 3 days, according to his wishes. He just hung out there in a mahogany casket, and then there was a solemn funeral, and they laid him to rest in the family tomb. George Washington, big man. Number 2, which is the largest U.S. state by area? Which is the largest U.S. state by area? And the answer is Alaska. Alaska is 665,384 square miles. So a lot of hiking and avoiding bear attacks there. Question number 3. What is the capital of Nevada? What is the capital of the state of Nevada? And the answer is Carson City. Carson City became the capital of the state, or of the territory of Nevada in 1861. And it was founded by one Abraham Curry, sounds like a spicy fellow. And it's situated in the high desert river valley, approximately 4,800 feet above sea level. Question number four. What historic event took place on December 7, 1941? What historic event took place on December 7, 1941? Well, that would have been Pearl Harbor. Relations between the USA and Japan had been choppy for some time due to American policy. I mean, in the 1930s, American foreign policy very much hinged on support for China. So aggression against China by Japan would bring Japan into conflict with the United States. And let's not forget that as early as 1931, the Tokyo government had extended its control over the Chinese province, of Manchuria. So many people believe a great many different things about Pearl Harbor. Was it done on purpose? Was it really the Japanese? What happened? Was it just a way to get us into the war? I don't know, but well, maybe I do. But all I'm going to tell you for today is that that was on December the 7th, 1941. And question five in the easy peasy lemon squeezy section. What is the tallest mountain in the United States? What is the tallest mountain in the United States? And well, if you'd have asked me a couple of weeks ago, I would have said Denali. But do we call it Mount McKinley now? It is the highest mountain peak in North America, with a summit elevation of 20,310 feet, and it's 6,190 meters above sea level. And actually, it's also the tallest mountain in the world from base to peak on land, measuring 18,000 feet. How exciting is that? Denali, Mount McKinley. Well, I'm sure we got all those right, and shame on us if we didn't. Let's go to the beefy weefy segment. All right, everyone, are you ready? Here we go. Question number six. What were the last two states admitted into the Union? What were the last two states admitted into the Union? And those were Hawaii and Alaska. So Hawaii became a state August 21st, 1959, a week or so before my birthday, the day that I was born. So I should probably live in Hawaii where it's lovely and sunny. Yes, I've already made up my mind. Hawaii is where I'm going. And then that made it the 50th state of the United States. Alaska became a state on January the 3rd, 1959. Number seven, who was the Confederate president during the Civil War? Who was the Confederate president during the Civil War? And I'm sure you all guessed right, Jefferson Davis. Jefferson F. Davis was an American politician who served as the only president of the Confederate States from 1861 to 1865. He represented Mississippi in the Senate and the House of Representatives, and he was a member of the Democratic Party before the American Civil War. And he was the United States Secretary of War from 1853 to 1857. Jefferson Davis, you lost that war, sir. Oh, well, never mind. Number eight. What year was the prohibition introduced? What year was the prohibition introduced? And those of you who enjoy a martini will know this one. The Prohibition era began in 1920 when the 18th Amendment to the US Constitution, which banned the manufacture, transportation, and sale of intoxicating liquors, went into effect with the passage of this thing called the Volstead Act. Now, despite new legislation, prohibition was difficult to enforce. Of course it was bloody difficult to enforce. Who doesn't want a martini at the end of the day? So the increase of the illegal production and the sale of liquor, you know, bootlegging, you know, and then all opening up all these speakeasies, the illegal drinking spots, you know, what would that do? Well, it would give you a rise in gang violence and organized crime. And all of this was just too much to handle. And we saw sort of waning support for prohibition by the end of the 1920s. And in early 1933, Congress adopted a resolution proposing a 21st Amendment to the Constitution that would repeal the 18th. And the 21st Amendment was ratified on December 5, 1933, ending prohibition. Huzzah, huzzah, huzzah. And what did everyone do when prohibition ended? They all went out and got absolutely raving drunk. And good for them, because they probably were fed up of all the bathtub gin, and it was wonderful to be able to have proper distilled alcohol once again, stuff that didn't rot your guts and kill you. Where are we? Yes, number nine. Here we go. Name the American program created to revive post-war European economies. Name the American program, hint, hint, CIA program, to revive post-war American, European economies. And that was the Marshall Plan, a U.S.-sponsored program implemented following the end of World War II, granting $13 billion in foreign aid to European countries that had been devastated physically and economically by World War II. Who was Marshall? U.S. Secretary of State George Marshall. He laid out the Marshall Plan. He believed the stability of the European governments depended on the economic stability of the people. Well, what a novel concept that is. He must have been a genius. By the time the Marshall Plan ended in 1951, all the countries who received aid saw their economies grow to better than pre-war levels. Except, of course, the Soviet Union believed that the Marshall Plan was a way to meddle in the internal affairs of European countries. And so this prevented Soviet satellite countries from accepting assistance from the United States. Interesting, interesting, 1 minute someone's your friend, 1 minute sometimes your enemy. It's almost as if all these things are planned in advance and war really doesn't need to happen. La la. Number 10, in the beefy section. Opponents of slavery set up which political party in 1854? Opponents of slavery set up which political party in 1854? Well, my darlings, the correct answer is the Republican Party, which was formed on March 20th, 1854, established in a place called Ripon, Wisconsin, where all the cheese comes from, by former members of the Whig Party. And these aren't trans people. That's what the Tories and the Whigs. It's a old remnant of old England, the Whig Party, to oppose the spread of slavery into Western territories. Yes, Democratic Party have sold people a crock of shit about being the People's Party over the years. After all, who can forget that they were the ones that started the Ku Klux Klan? All right, moving on. Let's go to the brainy, freezy section. I'm sure you all have scored perfectly throughout all of this, especially those of you who are really quick to look stuff up on your phones. And I'm sure you're going to know these because they're not as difficult as I would hope. But as we age, here's the thing, you see, my darlings. As we age, it takes a few minutes to retrieve the information from the lost corridors of our once erudite minds. And I am, of course, speaking for myself. Here we go. Actually, let me have a little sip. Hang on. I have to be careful with the fizzy drinks because my gut makes strange noises. Which is why I never drink fizzy drinks in public. But of course, I will drink them when I'm on the air and hopefully thousands of people are listening. On to the brain freezy section. Okay, number 11. Which was the first US state to ratify the Constitution? Which was the first US state to ratify the Constitution? And have a care, because it was Delaware. Ratification of the Constitution by the state of Delaware, December 7, 1787. They actually gave a very sort of short, curt response to that. We, the deputies of the people of the Delaware state, in convention met, having taken in our serious consideration the federal constitution proposed and agreed upon by the deputies of the United States in a general convention held in the city of Philadelphia, brotherly love, on the 17th day of September in the year of our Lord 1787, have approved, assented to, ratified, and confirmed, and by these presents do, in virtue of the power and authority to us given, for and in and all around and in the middle as well, behalf of ourselves and our constituents, fully, freely, and entirely approve of, assent to, ratify, and confirm the said Constitution, done in convention at Dover the 17th day of December in the year 1787. Huzzah! Very short and sweet. Question 12. Think carefully about this one. Which state has the most national parks? Which state has the most national parks? And that would be California, a state which has a blob of slime as its governor, Gruesome Newsom, a man whose aura has about 3 seizures per minute, and those would be the demons embedded in him as they try to act human but fail miserably. Sir, you are a walking demon junkie. I think you mainline them. I don't think you're actually in there anymore. Question 13. Which year did the US purchase Alaska from Russia? Which year did the US purchase Alaska from Russia? And that would be 1867. That marked the day in history when the treaty was finalized by William H. Seward. I know you all heard of Seward's Folly. He was the then US Secretary of State. And he signed it with some chappy, Baron de Stekel, a senior Russian envoy. And the treaty was for the purchase of the Russian America, present day Alaska. And the region was actually one of Russia's few colonies in America. So what we ask ourselves, why did Tsar Alexander II want to do this? I mean, he sold Alaska for 7.2 million. It's peanuts. It's about 2 cents an acre, or no, 2 cents a square foot or something. 120 million or so in today's dollar rates. Why would he do this? I think he really needed to focus his attentions more in the South and in the West, and places where he had to contend with Great Britain and its once mighty Royal Navy. Number 14. Which was the first US president to be impeached? Which was, or who was, I should say, the first US president to be impeached? That was actually Andrew Johnson. He was impeached by the House of Representatives February 24th, 1868. And the Senate tried the case in a trial that lasted from March to May in 1868. In the end, the Senate voted to acquit President Johnson by a margin of 35 guilty to 19 not guilty. One short vote of the two-thirds needed to convict. Why? Why did they impeach him? Before Abraham Lincoln was knocked off in 1865, he had formulated a plan of Reconstruction that would be lenient towards the defeated South as it rejoined the Union. He planned to grant a general amnesty to those who pledged an oath of loyalty to the United States, and if they agreed to obey all federal laws pertaining to slavery. Although the very highest ranking Confederate officials and military leaders were to be excluded from the general amnesty. So Lincoln's plan also stated that when a tenth of the voters had taken part in the 1860 election had agreed to the oath within a particular state, then that state could formulate a new government and start sending representatives to Congress. So Johnson was intent on carrying out this plan when he assumed the presidency. The policy, however, didn't sit well with people in those days who were called radical Republicans of Congress. They wanted to set up military governments and implement more stringent terms for readmission for the seceded states. And neither side was willing to compromise, so a clash of wills ensued. And the last question in the very difficult section. Which U.S. state is known as the Beaver State? Which U.S. state is known as the Beaver State? It was Oregon. Oregon. Now, let me say this about Oregon. We may not have much going for us, except lots of rain and moss and mold. But I have to admit, we do love our beavers. And we do take very good care of them. It is said that Oregon beavers are the best beavers in the world. And every year we have thousands of eager beaver lovers visit our fair state, hoping for a glimpse of the state beaver in its natural habitat. And now for the super obscure bonus question. If you can answer this one without looking it up, it is worth an extra $15 on your gift certificate. So sharpen your brains. Here we go. The bonus question. What number is attached to the wealthy abolitionists who funneled financial support to John Brown? What number is attached to the wealthy abolitionists who funneled financial support to John Brown? And the answer to the bonus question is the Secret Six. Six is the number. Who were the Secret Six? They were a loosely affiliated group that provided financial backing to John Brown before his raid on the Federal Armory at Harper's Ferry in 1859. So they got all this money together, these Northeastern abolitionists, and the money made the raid possible, because it enabled Brown to travel to Maryland to rent a farm and to use that as a hideout and a staging area, and also procure weapons for his men. But as we all know, the raid on Harper's Ferry failed, and Brown was captured by federal troops, and his little carpet bag containing all these important documents was seized. And inside the bag, you know, were letters establishing the network behind his actions, the names of the Secret Six. So fearing prosecution for conspiracy and treason, some members of the Secret Six fled the United States for a while, but none of them were actually ever prosecuted for their involvement with Brown. Who were they? One, Gerrit Smith, who was born into a rich family in upstate New York and just loved supporting reform causes. Thomas Wentworth Higginson, a minister and author who also commanded a regiment of black troops. Theodore Parker, a minister and prominent public speaking on reform topics and a transcendentalist, because those things did happen. It was an American, bona fide American philosophical movement back then. Samuel Gridley Howe. Now, he was a doctor and an advocate for the blind, but we know him because his wife Julia Ward Howe, would become famous for writing the battle hymn of the Republic. You know, mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. Then there was Benjamin, what was his name? Franklin Benjamin Sanborn. He was a Harvard graduate. He was also a transcendentalist. These are all anti-slavers, obviously. And then there was George Luther Stearns, who was a self-made businessman and had a lot of money and just liked to throw it around in good causes. So, darlings, I hope you all scored very highly. So be honest and email your scores to me, Arnie@arnieabedissian.com, and you will receive a gift certificate of $25 just for playing and getting 5 correct, $50 for all correct, plus extra 15 if you answered the bonus question without looking it up. Oh my God, I need a drink now. Excuse me. Well, that was fun. I think that we need to start teaching American civics and history in schools. And I think that adults need to start having coffee mornings, Constitution coffee mornings. That would be a wonderful idea. And now, my darlings, we move on to quack questions, answers, and comments. If you would like to share your wisdom and your weirdness with martini heads across the known universe, send your questions and comments to me because nobody else will read them. Arnie@arnieabedissian.com. Alternatively, you can snail mail Cosmic Arnie P.O. Box 714, Wilsonville, Oregon 97070, USA, and let me know if and how you wish to be identified, or I shall refer to you as Silly Goose or omit personal details. So let's shake up the fishbowl of perpetual perplexity and see what pops out. Shaky, 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 shaky. First one is from Dean in Hendersonville, Tennessee, who says, "Dear Arnie, what the heck is the uncreated mass? It comes up now and then in podcasts, and I don't understand how something uncreated can be a mass." Good question, Dean. Fairly obscure reference, unless they are referring to uncreated and created substance, the sort of thing discussed by people such as Spinoza and Descartes. My understanding of it is, and I haven't heard the term for a long time, my understanding of it is this: incarnate, discarnate, either or. In physical substance or in spirit form. So anything not expressing as a physical body, but is alive in spirit form, but is also able to reincarnate back into a physical form. Those are the people who populate the uncreated mass. Now, there's another meaning to it, is that the people who have ascended to the highest level that they could and physical incarnations no longer serve them, after a period of purification, they do go back into the actual source pod, the actual islands of paradise, and sweeten the pot there. But even they choose to come back and start incarnation again, because we are created by our creator to be co-creators. I hope that helps. If not, write me an email and I'll try to explain it better. The next one is from Patricia in Austin, Texas, who asks, "Arnie, what do you know about the Philadelphia experiment? Did it really happen, or is it all made up?" It happened. It very much happened. And depending on whether you were in it or out of it, it didn't go well. The point of the experiment, in my opinion, was to create a protective force shield around an object. In this case, it would have been the USS Eldridge. And this force field was supposed to absorb or deflect incoming missiles. And perhaps that magnetic field would also prevent enemy radar from seeing the ship, or would it just interfere with enemy radar detection in some meaningful way? So USS Eldridge was a destroyer-class ship. In October 1943, it was hanging out in Philadelphia, as one does, and they zapped it with this experiment, which distorted light to such an extent that people who witnessed it reported strange green mists and whooshing sounds and feelings, and then boom. The ship was invisible for a few minutes, but it was still there because the water around the ship behaved as though the ship was still there. And according to witnesses, after a few minutes, the ship reappeared, but most of the sailors did not. And the ones that did reappear were severely traumatized, and some of them were reported to have melted into parts of the ship itself. And I know for a fact that can happen. That does happen, because we mess with things we shouldn't mess with. What happened to those poor souls? You will have to ask the Navy, and they won't tell you. But there was more to it than just becoming invisible. When you mess with light to that extent, you can skip locations and you can skip time. I would love to speak to anyone who actually witnessed it or was a part of it. No, it happened, Patricia. It happened. And I'm glad it happened before my time, because honestly, it's just the sort of thing I would volunteer for. And that would have been a very short lifetime for me, wouldn't it? Yes, it would. Okay, let's have another question. This one is from Annie, who lives in Tacoma, Washington. And Annie asks, you have spoken in favor of the death penalty for crimes you consider hideous. Where do you draw the line? And if asked, would you pull the trigger or press the lever to end those lives? A very serious question from Annie in Tacoma. Let me have a drinky poo. That is yum-o-matic. That is delicious. Okay, here we go. We are not living in normal times, darling. We're living, you know, the great cataclysm, the great reveal, the great awakening, the great mop-up, the great pumpkin. I don't know. I did not come down to this earth to be popular and say pretty things to get likes on my social media. I am in favor of death penalty for hideous crimes. Crimes committed by those who allow demons to crawl over their bodies and infect their minds. Those who rape children to please their Luciferian overlords, which is most of Congress and most of the United Kingdom's Parliament. I'm in favor of death penalty for those who know this happens and cover it up because they quietly get a kickback from Satan's slush fund. I am in favor of the death penalty for those who knowingly injected humans with a bioweapon posing as a vaccine just so that they could line their own pockets. I am in favor of death for those who steal the wealth of a people and use it to line their own pockets, and then deny it and accuse the accuser of the same crime. You're not just stealing wealth. It's not just a simple case of theft. Raiding the coffers of American citizens' money affects our day-to-day quality of life and the decisions that we have to make for ourselves and our families. People are going without housing. People are going without food, and they're going without medical care because the Luciferians are stealing it. And they're keeping half for themselves and giving the rest to imported foreign criminals for the sole purpose of replacing citizens with freeloaders who will vote as directed. Of course, what these freeloaders don't yet know is that within a few years, they too will be replaced by the next agenda. Assuming it goes that far. Annie, these are not random crimes, nor are they temporary insanity or, you know, crimes of passion. This is a carefully planned agenda to replace mankind with post-human biobots. Please take this seriously, because their goal is to have zero humans and also zero animals on this planet. And by the way, a little addendum, those of you who think that an organization that is spelt PETA actually does something good for animals, you are wrong. I can tell you, throughout my entire experience working for various government departments that never existed, they want to dehumanize humans by taking away their pets and eventually, of course, having no animals, nothing on the planet. Because post-human biological bots don't need food. You know, my friend Claire keeps telling me, they're terraforming this planet for reptilian overlords. She's right. That is exactly what they're doing. Now, Annie, you ask me, would I, if asked, pull the trigger or pull the lever or whatever is the method of execution? Well, I didn't come down to this earth to be an executioner. If the head of America's military police can't find willing volunteers, then yes, if asked, I would do it, and I will tell you why. I'm not champing at the bit to do it. But would I do it? Yes. In my shaman's code, if I pass sentence, because, you know, shamans of old served as arbitrators and judges, if I'm the one that passes the sentence, I must be prepared to carry out the sentence with my own hand. Now, I understand that I have a background that many don't. I have seen these horrors with my own eyes. That changes you, Annie. That changes you. So yes, without hesitation, I would be honored to send these depraved apologies for humans, these human-hating demons, back to the fetid swamp from which they were birthed. I think I would be a good choice for it, actually. I mean, if anyone wanted genuine redemption, I could argue for them. I could help facilitate that. They will still die, but their final destination would be the lowest level of heaven, instead of the cold, dark, super-dense realm, that softball in the sky by the moon, from which there is no escape. Do you think less of me now? You shouldn't. Again, I didn't come here to be popular, and I've done very well with that, by the way. I came here to do a job, and I'm not leaving until it's finished. Back in the day, I could have taken money and done this stuff and shut up like everyone else. I may even have ended up as the head of an organization somewhere or another. But what does one do with such dirty money? How does one live with oneself when one chooses to receive treats from the dark master's hand? We should put that question to the terrified politicians today with their rabid demons on full display. I mean, Trump, God bless him, finally had to come out and say, these people are deranged. They're mad. There's something really wrong with them. It is. They're mad. They've got demons, literally. I mean, I am not a religious person and I don't do biblical, but the demons are riding on the backs of these people. They have attached themselves to their central nervous system. For the vast majority, there is no redemption. Death really is the better option for them. And there's a ceremony that deals with the disposal of the bodies of such people. I do hope whoever is dealing with what's going on in Gitmo is doing a good job with that. If not, call me. Well, my darlings, do we have any more questions? Not really, not today. I did have quite a few questions coming in asking me, you know, about various mixology items, etc. And I did promise that I would talk a little bit more about the booze itself. And I promise going forward I will do that. But allow me now to have a little sip of this lovely drink. And just remind you, please, to visit my website from time to time, www.arnieavedisian.com. If you are having trouble with any type of addiction, whether you're overweight or you drink too much or you don't drink enough or I know whatever is your addiction, consider joining my Ego Busters Club. We meet on the second and fourth Monday of each month at 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. Pacific time. And we're a nice little group. Each group is a little different. Same content in both groups, both in the 4 and the 7 p.m. And we talk about what the ego is from many points of view. We've gone from Course in Miracles to Stoic philosophy to modern day psychology. But once you understand ego programming and you understand that you're not the one that's addicted, your spirit sense could never be addicted. It is the programming of the ego distracting you from your spiritual center that is giving you this addiction, so that you devote your entire life to this one substance or this one behavior that you feel you cannot live without. And you have given up everything for this one substance or this one behavior. Your family, your friends, your job, your health, your sanity. Join my Ego Busters group and give up the one thing and get everything else back. It is totally possible. I'm living proof of it. Everybody in the group on some level is living proof. Just do it for your sanity's sake. You want to make it to the fourth dimension, which is lapping at our shores, then you need to have some real spiritual intimacy with yourself. You can't hide yourself from yourself. And if you're a grown-up, an adult, as opposed to adult, if you're an adult and you're, you know, anywhere 30 over, you're a grown person, stop blaming your parents for your problems. You chose your parents, you incarnated for the lessons they would teach you and for the shit they would feed you. You chose all this. Soul to soul, no one's having a problem. Humans are bashing each other on the head and the spirit souls are going to each other going, why? I wonder why my human did that. Well, probably because the spirit is not inhabiting the human. Yeah, that's probably why it is. If you want to make it into the fourth dimension, you cannot be a victim. You cannot feel sorry for yourself, and you cannot blame everybody else around you for all of your problems. You have to be self-accountable. You have to be awake. You have to be aware. And you have to walk in the presence of your true glory, which is divine, divine, divine. Now, does that mean you can't have the occasional drink once in a while? Well, if you're an alcoholic, that's exactly what it means. And if you're really fat, you're probably going to want to stay away from booze for a while until you sort all that out. But the good news is, it'll take a while to lose some weight. And if you're spiritually centered on that journey, you will lose all of your cravings. You just need to spend a good long amount of time away from the substance of choice and away from the behavior of choice so that you can recenter yourself and listen to the voices inside of you. What is the ego programming saying? Is that my voice? Is that God's voice? Is that the ego's voice? Is that my fourth grade teacher's voice? The world is too busy, sweethearts. Time in silence will solve all of your problems. Listen to me. This is very important. Do not hide from your own self. You will have one fucked up life if you do that. So go to my website. Take a look at all the goodies I have on offer. And definitely take a look at that Ego Busters group. And maybe you are a perfect individual. Maybe there's nothing wrong with you, and my gosh, I'm going to attend all of your classes if that's so. But if you are this perfect individual that has no problems, please tell your friends who do have problems about it. The cost is $150 for an entire year. We're not doing this for the money, okay? We're doing this because I feel so wonderful now that I've lost all this weight. I can hear myself think again. I can bend down and pick something up on the floor without my boobs smashing into my knees. I cannot tell you how, you know, weight was always an issue for me. I broke that addiction. You can do it too, whatever the behavior, whatever the substance. It has nothing to do with your background. It has nothing to do with the behavior or the substance. It has everything to do with understanding that it's not you. It's the ego. Okay. Darlings, sweethearts, we're getting close to the end of the show. We have almost finished the drinky poo, and that means we're close to the end of the show. Now, I have to tell you, today's real life cocktail was lovingly prepared in honor of Marie Le Pen, who is currently under attack by the French faction of the New World Order. Allons enfants de la patrie, le jour de gloire est arrivé, contre nous de la tyrannie. The cocktail I have chosen in honor of Marie Le Pen is called a French 75, and here's how you make it. It's rather strong, and I'm enjoying it a little too quickly. You get yourself 1 ounce of gin, good gin, half an ounce of freshly squeezed lemon juice, half an ounce of simple syrup, and roughly 3 ounces of champagne or other good sparkling wine. And you want to garnish it with something. A lemon twist is usually quite easy. So you mix the gin, the lemon juice, and the simple syrup into a shaker with cracked ice and shaky, 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 shaky until it's well chilled. Then strain it into a champagne flute and then top with the champagne and then garnish with a lemon twist. It's delicious, it's simple, it has a bit of a punch, and it will make you burp. But it's elegant and sophisticated and très français, you know what I mean? Now, there's another version of it, because you can do a lot with champagne cocktails. And I think I'm going to be concentrating on them quite a bit this summer. Another version is this. Take 1.5 ounces of gin, 3/4 of an ounce of lemon juice, freshly squeezed, and then take 1/2 ounce of amaretto, just 1/2 ounce, don't overdo it. And then you're going to want 2 ounces of sparkling wine or champagne already chilled. And again, you know, a lemon twist for the garnish. So go ahead and, you know, repeat the steps of adding the gin, the lemon juice and the amaretto into a shaker with cracked ice and shaky, shaky, shaky until really well chilled. And then nicely strain it and, you know, put it in a champagne glass or a coupe glass, whatever you want. I like champagne flutes myself. And then top the whole lot off with sparkling wine and then or champagne, and then garnish with a lemon twist. Lately, you know, I've enjoyed losing weight so much. I've pretty much halved the amount of alcohol in all of my drinks. And most of my drinks this summer, I think, are going to be spritzers. Like, I may have a fully fledged Manhattan, but I'm also going to probably use less alcohol, top it up with club soda, and call it a Manhattan spritzer or something. So, darlings, remember, cocktails are great if they are an occasional treat. You've got to use top shelf ingredients and take the art of mixology seriously, and then one drink is all you will ever need. I'm Ani, mad as the day is long, Avedisian. This was a Metaphysical Martini, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio, to whom we are most grateful. Copious thanks to Mystical Wares in Mount Vernon, Washington, for kindly funding the intergalactic distribution of the show, mysticalwares.com, Mystical Wares, Mount Vernon, Washington. Online or on location, you'll be sure to give them a standing ovation. Huzzah for Mystical Wares. Huzzah. I'll see you all in a couple of weeks, but until we meet again, if you live in a blue state, you are under globalist control. So it's time to make up our minds between fight and flight. And the best way to make the right decision is to let the spirit inhabit the human.
You have been listening to The Metaphysical Martini with Ani Avedisian, the Mad Shaman, a production of CosmicReality.com.